Weekday mornings from 11.
This is Northside Today.
And now online, I want to welcome Louise O'Reilly, who is Sinn Féin TD for Dublin Fingal. Good morning, Louise.
Good morning, John.
Thanks very much for taking the call. We're going to talk about a couple of things, but I'm really dying to get to the statement that you made, that you'd want to be a Minister for Health. It's a very brave, brave move.
It's true to say that the book has already been written on how not to do it. When I say that I want to be the Minister for Health, that's taken from an article that was in Unfublocked. And really, what it is, it's about our health policy. I want the opportunity for our party, for Sinn Féin, to be able to implement our health policy, because the health policy that we have has been devised not just by us sitting here in Leinster House, but it's actually been devised by going out and talking to campaign groups, going out and talking to workers in the health service, talking to patients, talking to people who have a view on the health service, taking that on board, and then looking at what we spend, seeing how we can spend it better, and seeing how we can make a real difference for people who, you know, there's an awful lot of us have come to really make our peace with the fact that the health service is not good enough, and we don't expect very much. Our doctors and nurses are absolutely fantastic. Our healthcare professionals, theatre porters, healthcare assistants, everyone working in the health service, they're all doing their best, but they're fighting against the system, and the system is what comes from the Department of Health. So when I say I want to be the health minister, it's not personal to me. I want to see Sinn Féin policies implemented, because I know in my own constituency in Fingal, as well as right across the country, there are far too many people who really need our policies to be implemented. They are, you know, those, if you're one of the 680,000 people on a waiting list, if you're on a trolley in Beaumont at the moment, or in Our Lady of Lourdes, if you're waiting at home for an appointment, if you're someone who has been diagnosed and just needs treatment, if you're in hospital and you need to be transferred to the community but the supports are not there, there are literally hundreds of thousands of people right across the state who I think need Sinn Féin policies to be implemented. And so when I say I want to be the Minister for Health, it's not personal to me. I want to see Sinn Féin health policies being implemented.
And do you think that the budget, the present budget that's going into the health system, Louise, is adequate, or would you be looking for more money if you were in the position?
Well, we have proposed additional spending in the area of health, but I think if you look at what we already put into the health service, I'll give you a small example. We pay €355 million every year as a subsidy to people who have private health insurance. Very many people have private health insurance because they're afraid of the public health system, and that's wrong. People shouldn't be afraid of the public health system. They shouldn't be forced to have private health insurance because they fear that they're going to get left on a waiting list. But every year we give a subsidy of €355 million into private health insurance, and I think that that's wrong. I think that that money could be better spent in the public system. Likewise, the National Treatment Purchase Fund takes money out of the public service and puts it into the private sector to buy services. And I would say that that's, and we in Sinn Féin would say that that's counterintuitive, because it's essentially what you're doing there is you're investing money in the private sector and somehow hoping that that's going to improve public services. And the fact is, it won't. It can't. If you want to improve public services, you improve the investment in public services. It's really very simple. So it's not so much what is being spent at the moment, but rather where the government priorities are. And the government's priorities seem to be funding the private sector. There's a lot of money spent on agency staff. There's a lot of money spent on outsourcing. And if we reorient that and focus all of that inwards on the public health service, I think we could make a very, very real difference before even we have to look at additional spending, which Sinn Féin is proposing, absolutely. But even if we look at what we're spending at the moment and how we're channeling money into the private sector, there's a lot that can be done, you know, even with the money that we have at the moment. Without ever increasing it, we could actually make a very real difference in the health service.
Yeah, now we're talking about the private sector and the public sector. So people are saying that's a two-tier health system. Do you agree that it should, it, 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 people should get the same regardless?
I think people should be treated on the basis of clinical need. I think if you're sick, you should be treated in the public health service. I think if you need to see a doctor, you should be able to see a doctor. And one of the things that I have encountered, and I do a lot of clinics, and I think maybe this is not an issue for the other party so much, because they wouldn't be as active on the ground as Sinn Féin is. But I know myself and Anthony Mitchell as well in the constituency of Dublin Bay North, we would do a huge amount of clinics and have a lot of contact with people, with the electorate. We knock on doors, we go out and we talk to people. I know from talking to those people, there is a real need to address the inequalities within the health service, because there's a lot of people who are staying at home because they haven't got the money for the out-of-pocket expenses. And I mean people who are working, but they're already at the pin of their collar with rent spiralling out of control. The cost of living is high and getting higher. And, you know, you've got to address the fact that these people are deliberately staying away. They're counting themselves out of the health service. So there is a two-tier health system in operation, and it's very often not visible, because there are people who simply aren't attending the doctor because they don't have the money. Likewise, there are people who are, if you are one of the 680,000 people who are on a waiting list, you're looking at your neighbour with access to private health insurance, and that person is able to jump the queue. Now, you should be able to get seen on the basis of clinical need, not on the basis of your bank balance, or whether or not you can get a credit union loan to go to see a consultant. And I've had people in my clinics, and I know I've spoken to people, and I know Denise Mitchell would have as well, who really find themselves in a situation where they're contemplating going to the credit union to get the money to go to see the consultant, because they're worried they can't afford private health insurance, but they know that if they go private, they can skip the queue. And that's wrong. You know, a doctor should decide if you need to be seen, if you need further investigation, or if you need another procedure, and that should be done on the basis of clinical need. Whereas you'll find a lot of people, when they go into the hospital, they're asked nearly at the door, do you have private health insurance? And that's code for, can I bump you up the queue?
Yeah.
Or you've got people who eventually get to see consultants, and they're told, well, yeah, you do need to have an operation. I can put you on the waiting list, or if you have access to the funds, or if you have private health insurance, you can have it done in a matter of weeks. That's not fair. I mean, there's absolutely no dispute in the fact that we have a two-tier health service, and Sinn Féin has tried to address that in a number of ways, by making positive suggestions on the floor of the Dáil, by suggesting things like an integrated waiting list management system, by being proactive in proposing our policies, which are specifically designed to address the two-tier nature and the inequalities within the health service. Now, very often, when you're talking to Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, they fall on deaf ears, our proposals. But I know, because I've been around the country the last couple of months, talking to healthcare workers, talking to patients, talking to campaign groups, I know that our policies are very well received by people who know and understand the health service, and people who know and understand the inequality and the two-tier nature of that health service. Those people are very anxious for change. They want to see our policies being implemented, and they want to see an end to the two-tier nature of healthcare provision in this state.
Yes, now I've spoken to people, and we talk about health ministers and things like that, and people are so annoyed with this whole system. They say, that minister, my God, he probably has never been in an A&E. Do you reckon you as a Sinn Féin Minister for Health would be more in contact with the people on the ground?
Well, I think there's no disputing that Sinn Féin are a party that have our roots in our communities. We are in contact with people on the ground. We are out every week and every weekend knocking on doors and talking to people. I often knock on doors up around North County Dublin, Skerries where I live, or up in Balbriggan or Swords, and people will open the door and they say, is there an election on? And I said, no, I'm just here to talk to you. So I can't know what it is you want me to do on your behalf if you don't tell me. And I know that people don't often get a chance to drop into one of my clinics or to call into my office in Swords. And so I do try and get out, and other Sinn Féin TDs and local representatives do the same. We try and get out and we try and talk to people. And it's true. I mean, I've spoken to people in relation to whose kids are waiting for diagnostic tests. they have the teacher has recommended that they be tested maybe for autism or ADHD, and they will look at the former minister James Riley, and you know, they would say to him, well, his son or his daughter never had to wait on a waiting list. You know, they've never had to sit in accident and emergency with an elderly relative up through the night. They don't really know what it is, because a lot of these people have private health insurance. They come from very wealthy backgrounds, but they're not the majority. They're very much the minority. And the majority are the people that I'm out talking to on a weekly and a daily basis. And those people are saying the time has come to end the inequality in the health service and to really have a single tier access to the health service on the basis of clinical need and not ability to pay.
Okay, now I spoke to you off air there, Louise, and I told you I had an experience recently where I was 12 hours in A&E with my daughter from Friday afternoon till a Saturday morning. And I don't think the nurses and doctors would mind me saying this because they're all fantastic. But there was an announcement made about 5 o'clock in the morning to say that anybody who hasn't seen a doctor yet, there's an 8-hour waiting list. Now, as I said, the nurses and the doctors were all absolutely brilliant, and they were... Their job was practically impossible, you know, and they had to make this announcement, and I was expecting people to get annoyed. Nobody got annoyed with them because they know the difficulties that they're facing. So is it...
They do, and there's a capacity problem in the health service. This is the thing that's very often lost. It's not because the staff aren't doing their best, because they are, and it's not because the nurse... I represented nurses for 10 years before I was elected and I worked in the union. Like, I can tell you, very often a nurse is paid for an 8 or a 10 or a 12 hour shift, but he or she is working far in excess of that, because they won't walk away and leave their colleagues short-handed.
Yeah.
They won't walk away and leave the ward short. They won't walk away and leave people waiting, and they are trying to do their best. But there is a problem with capacity, and there is a problem with staffing. I mean, you know, every time you're out and about and you're talking to people, they'll tell you, well, they have a son or a daughter or a neighbour who's a qualified nurse, and she's in Australia, and she's in Dubai, she's in England. I mean, you only have to go to the recruitment fairs for health professionals and for nurses and doctors, and you see that they're coming from overseas, and they're coming in large numbers. They want our graduates. Our graduates are among the best and the brightest in the world, and yet we can't keep them. And that's why when you're in Beaumont Hospital having waited all that time at 5 o'clock in the morning, some unfortunate nurse or doctor or admin assistant has to come out and say to you, listen, folks, I'm very sorry, but there's going to be an additional 8-hour wait. That's not because they don't want to see it. Of course they want to see the patients that are there, but there just simply isn't the staff. And one of the key elements to recruiting and retaining staff, pay is important. Obviously, pay is a very key issue, but we also have to address the very poor working conditions and the fact that healthcare workers really don't feel like they're valued within the health service. They don't feel, and I know this because I know many of them personally. I represented them for a good number of years, and I still have very close links with nursing representatives, and they will tell you they don't feel like the government has much regard for them at all. The doctors that are graduating in the next couple of weeks, who'll be on a plane to Australia within hours very often of graduating, those doctors are going because they don't feel that the health service and the minister have very much regard for them at all. And I think that needs to change. We need to address the issues within the workplace. We need to address things like career progression. We also do need to address pay, and we wouldn't be shy about saying that. But we need to address access to continuing professional development. You talk to a nurse working over in England, and she'll tell you that the difference between working there and working here, it's not a massive difference in the wages, but there is a difference in the working conditions. There is a difference in access to continuing professional development, and there is a difference in how they feel they are regarded by the NHS or by the Australian health system versus how they are regarded in Ireland. And unfortunately, they're voting with their feet. They are leaving in big numbers. And I think that is nothing short of disgraceful, because we should be doing everything we can to encourage our bright young graduates to stay in this country, and also everything we can to retain the good staff that we have, who have years of valuable experience. But unfortunately, the recruitment and retention programmes that the Minister is putting in place, they're not working. And clearly nurses in particular and doctors feel that they're being let down by the health service. And I think we have a capacity issue in the health service, and we have a recruitment and retention crisis in staff. That needs to be tackled as a matter of urgency.
So are you saying now that the working conditions would be a priority?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, but you've got to look at what's causing the problem with the working conditions. You know, part of the problem is caused by capacity itself. So we don't have enough beds in our health service, which means that nurses are treating patients on chairs and on trolleys. Now, that's not ideal. No nurse who has done his or her training will tell you that they did all of that training so that they could treat people on a plastic chair in a waiting room or in another inappropriate location. That's a big, big part of it, is there just physically are not enough beds. And likewise, when a person is ready to go home, when they should be transferred out and into the community, they get stuck in the bed there because there isn't anywhere for them to go. And I raised the example, and Councillor Natalie Tracy, who's a Sinn Féin councillor, her mum had, and she won't mind me saying it because it is public knowledge, and Natalie's been very public with her campaign with the Neurological Alliance of Ireland. Her mum was months in Beaumont when really what she needed was intensive rehabilitation. She didn't need to be in a hospital bed. So the nurses who were nursing her mum, they couldn't give her what she needed. She needed specialist help for neuro rehab, as they call it. The nurses couldn't give that, and yet she waited in the bed because there weren't sufficient supports in the community to be able to discharge her mum. Now, that's very demoralising for the nurses. They're well trained, they're good at what they do, but they haven't got the specialists. They couldn't give the specialist treatment that Natalie's mum needed. So therefore, she ended up inappropriately placed in a hospital bed when she needed to be in the community. And meanwhile, there are people downstairs in the accident and emergency department on trolleys, on chairs, who need to be in the bed. So the system is dysfunctional, and that's very demoralising for nurses and doctors. And that's the situation that they're working with every day of the week.
Yeah, no, I've seen it firsthand. The system is definitely dysfunctional, but it's not the nurses or the doctors' fault.
No.
Can you see yourself being health minister in the future?
Well, as everything in politics, it's a numbers game. But as I said to you, it's not really personal to me.
Yeah,
I would like to see Sinn Féin policies being implemented, and I can very definitely see those. And I'll tell you why. Because when you're out and about talking to people, as I have been up and down the country for the last number of months, you'll see that there is a real appetite for a big change in our health service based on fully costed alternative policies that focus on the public sector instead of the private sector.
Okay, now you're a Sinn Féin spokesperson on health, so we're going to move on because there's a couple of issues that I want to talk to you about. One is you're very concerned about the number of primary care addiction counsellors for Dublin North East. What's the story there, Louise?
Well, we've seen that the figures for addiction counsellors are going down, which is very worrying and very troubling, because we can see that the numbers of people who are trying to deal with addiction is on the increase. And I hosted a meeting very recently with Senator Francis Black in the Little Theatre in Skerries, and Francis set up and runs the Rise Foundation, which helps the family of those people who are struggling with addiction. It's a fantastic foundation, and we had a very, very good discussion afterwards. And some of the figures, when they are outlined about the impact of harmful drinking, and you know, there were people who attended who maybe had experiences in their own family, and they spoke to us afterwards. And one of the first questions that people ask you is, what help is available for my loved one, or for my neighbour, or my friend, or indeed, for the person themselves? What help is out there? And it's very disheartening to have to say to them that the number of counsellors is decreasing while the number of people seeking help is going up, particularly when you consider that, you know, harmful drinking is a contributory factor in deaths from breast cancer, from other forms of cancer. You've got someone who's struggling hard to cope with that addiction, and when they turn for help, you realise that there are only, in the Dublin North East region, there are only 16.6 whole-time equivalent counsellors working. You know, I mean, that's like Fingal is the fastest growing population in the country, and yet the services appear to be declining at the same rate as the population is increasing. You know, and problems with addiction manifest themselves back in the health service when they are not addressed, and counselling and the type of support that can give is a key way to address the issues of addiction. And unfortunately, for people who are looking for help in North County Dublin, the help is not there for them, because the number of counsellors has halved in recent years, while the population is on the increase. So, you know, you can see where that is going to cause a serious and a very significant problem.
And it's an awful thing to say, Louise, that I'd say nearly every family is affected by some sort of addiction, whether it be alcohol or drug abuse. And to say that they're letting the counsellors plummet to a very low amount.
I mean, if you look at the Health Research Board figures for the National Alcohol Diary Survey, they estimate that more than 150,000 Irish people are dependent drinkers, but 1.35 million are harmful drinkers. And 30% of people who are interviewed say that they experienced some form of harm as a result of their own drinking. So that will give you an idea, the scale of the problem. So you would imagine, to me, the scale of the problem, that I should be here talking to you saying that the number of counsellors has actually gone up significantly. Yeah. But in truth, it has gone down. So you've got more people who are seeking this help, but fewer people who are available to help them. And that is a very serious worry, because, you know, this is a health issue. It's a public health issue. There's a bill coming back to the Dáil in the next couple of weeks, and it's the Public Health Alcohol Bill. And like, that's a very clear indication that alcohol misuse and harmful drinking is a public health issue and should be dealt with as a health issue. And yes, when you ask the HSE what they are doing in practical terms, the answer you get is that they have cut the number of addiction counsellors by nearly half. So, I mean, what message is that sending to people who are struggling with addiction? You know, it sends a very clear message from the government, I'm afraid, and not a very pleasant one for those people.
No, it is. It's crazy. And we're talking about A&E earlier on. And this is probably a bit of a contentious question, but and we're talking about alcohol abuse and drug abuse. Now, people in A&E, Grant, I didn't witness it now the night I was in there, but I've often heard people complaining that people are coming in very intoxicated after being stoned out of their head on drugs, and it leads to a bit of annoyance. Did you ever come across people complaining about that, Louise?
Well, I tell you something that I have noticed, and I've spoken to a number of people about it, is the issue of what they call dual diagnosis. So this is where a person has an issue with addiction and also an issue with mental health.
Yeah.
And what the HSE say to those people is, well, look, we can't deal with your mental health issue until you deal with the addiction. So you go off and get yourself clean or get yourself sober and then come back, and we will deal with any mental ill health that you have. But the truth is, those two things are very, very clearly connected, you know, and the one can't be separated from the other. So there's an awful lot of people who are struggling with addiction and struggling with mental health issues, and they're not being dealt with. And that manifests itself in accident and emergency, because sometimes those people come to physical harm. And I think, you know, when you look at the way that the mental health services have been run down, you can see that there is certainly a capacity issue there. But when you also look at the fact that there aren't any counsellors, you have to say to yourself, well, how do people end up in accident and emergency? Nobody goes there because they want to go there. They go there because they feel they have no choice, or because there's nowhere else open to them. So they find themselves in accident and emergency through no fault or choice of their own. And there's no doubt about it that if you've been waiting in accident and emergency and you see someone come in, and you may not know, you look at that person and you think, well, that person might be drunk, or they might be intoxicated in some other way, and you think, well, you know, how come they've done it to themselves, or how come they're getting it ahead of me? But, you know, I mean, if they're sick, they should be treated. Unfortunately, what gets treated in accident and emergency is the physical manifestation and not the mental ill health and not the addiction. So really, those people will represent back at A&E because they're not being dealt with. The situation that they're in is not being dealt with properly, and all of the problems and the issues that they have are not being addressed. But the same as anyone who finds themselves in accident and emergency, nobody wants to be there. You end up there because you have no choice and nowhere else to go. But it is all connected. And you look at the running down of the mental health services and the lack of addiction counsellors, and you can see how people could end up in accident and emergency and could be there. And, you know, I can understand why people are frustrated because of that, absolutely.
Yes, now I've heard of cases as well, Louise, about it, like self-harm. People are presenting themselves to A&E and they're being bandaged up, sent off home, and they're not being sent to counsellors or anything like that. It's crazy.
Exactly, and that's the problem, is that, you know, if you don't deal with the underlying issue, well then the physical manifestation of that issue will keep presenting itself over and over again back at accident and emergency, and nobody wants to be in that situation. But it is the inevitable conclusion. When you don't have enough services, people fall through the cracks and they end up in the health service through the only door that's open to them. And very often the only door that's open is the accident and emergency department, which is probably not the place for them to be. But that's where they go. And as you say, they get patched up and sent back out into the world, when really what they need is they need to have the issues of mental health addressed, and the issues of addiction, where appropriate, addressed, and then you probably would see them much less coming back into accident and emergency departments.
Yes, now, I hate to rush on. It really just goes to show you, anytime we talk, Louise, I end up overrunning on time. And it just goes to show you the problems there are with the health system.
Absolutely.
Another thing I'm going to talk to you about is this. Yeah, you're very concerned about doctors without the requisite specialist training. And these guys are filling consultancy posts.
Yeah, and again, that goes back to an issue of capacity. Yeah. Because our doctors and our nurses are leaving the country in droves, we're going to find ourselves in a situation where we have a serious deficit in terms of trained and appropriate personnel. And I think, you know, the figures that have been released recently show that the range of specialist services for people within the health service at the moment, that range of services is actually shrinking, but the complexity of illness is growing. So we really, we're not addressing, not alone are we not addressing for the here and now, but we're not putting contingency plans in place to address for the fact that we have an ageing population. And that's a good thing. And people give out about the age, you know, they often say, oh, should we have an ageing population? But it's not brilliant. Isn't it brilliant that we're living longer? Yeah. It's a positive thing. It's a good thing. But it does bring with it its own complexities, and it does bring with it its own specific health requirements. And so there is a need for us to have, not just now, to be able to put our hand on doctors that are trained and specialists, but also for the future. So we should be putting in train now plans to ensure that we have qualified, capable medical practitioners who are going to be able to deliver the services that are required for the population in 10 or 20 years' time as well, because otherwise we're just going to find ourselves back in the same situation time and time again.
Right, Louise, as I said, we're overrunning again. As
there's always a lot to talk about.
Yeah, you could take up the full 2 hours of the show, Louise, I think. So when you become Minister for Health, Louise, are you confident that Sinn Féin policy can sort out some, if not all, of the problems that we've just discussed?
I absolutely am. Every policy that we put forward has been fully costed by the Department of Finance or the Department of Health. And we know what we're saying, because we have developed our policy in consultation with healthcare workers, with patients, with campaign groups, and with the Departments of Health and Finance. So we know that we have costed it correctly. And we also know that while, you know, some people who are very wealthy don't want to hear this, we believe that we need to take the private sector out of public sector healthcare and deliver a proper funded public health service. And, you know, we're prepared to put our money where our mouth is, as it were. we're prepared to bring in legislation which would make the government and the minister legally accountable for service delivery. So, yes, I am confident that Sinn Féin have the policies that will deliver the real and fundamental change that is required within our health service.
Now, the $6 million question, Louise. Can you see a general election coming down anytime soon?
Well, to be honest, given the controversies with An Garda Síochána and Noreen O'Sullivan, and the fact that the majority of deputies in Dáil Éireann, although they didn't sign up to our motion necessarily, but the majority of deputies in Dáil Éireann have expressed a lack of confidence in the Garda Commissioner, you would wonder that that there hasn't been a general election already. But clearly Fianna Fáil are terrified of a general election because if they weren't, they would put an end to propping up the Fine Gael government and propping up the Garda Commissioner with them. So it is difficult to see when a general election will be, considering the confidence and supply agreement between Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael appears to be very all-encompassing and appears to be able to survive plenty of scandals. But we're up for a general election. I don't fear a general election. In fact, if there was a general election in the morning, I'd be happy to stand on my record, as would my colleagues. And also, we will present our proposals for the health service and every other sector. We would be confident that that we would return an increased mandate. But as yet, Fianna Fáil seem very willing to put up with all that's going on with the health service, to put up with all that's going on with An Garda Síochána, to put up with oversubscription in our schools and all that goes along with that. They seem very happy and content to prop up the Fine Gael government. So I suppose it is within their gift to decide on that. But for as long as they're happy to support the regressive policies of Fine Gael, it seems unlikely that there'll be an election any time soon.
And if there is, would you run on a health ticket, Louise?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we'll be putting out our policies for everybody. We'll, you know, I'm the representative for the constituency of Fine Gael, and I'd be asking those people to endorse me. I am the health spokesperson, but I also do a huge amount of constituency and other work as well, as indeed most deputies do. So I'd be standing on my record and on the record of my party if and when the time comes.
Right, Louise, once again, thank you very, very much for taking the call, and I'm sure we could go on talking probably forever, but thank you very much for taking the call, and I'm sure we will be talking again. Thank you, Louise.
Indeed.
This is 90.3 Near FM.